Happy Friday, everyone. Thank you, all of you who are supporting Into the Word financially. We could not stay on this radio station without that assistance, or even keep up our website offerings without some additional assistance that comes from another donation base. I appreciate all of you that take care of that. God bless you for it. We are also going to remind you that the weekend is here and the Lord's Day is coming, and you should not forsake the assembling together of the saints. You need to have a home congregation. You need to be there on a regular basis with your brothers and sisters in Christ so you can be encouraged and encourage others to the love and good deeds that we're supposed to be doing. We need to study together. We need to worship and praise and pray and serve together. If you don't have a home church, you need to find one. And if you're actively looking and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, I extend to you my customary invitation. Come and check us out. Maybe we can become your home church. Let's open our Bibles to 1 Samuel, chapter number 8. Now, we talked about how Samuel leads Israel into a new period of rededication. He becomes their new judge. I think it's the year after the death of Samson, the time that the ark spent in the land of the Philistines, the destruction of the tabernacle, the relocation of the ark to Kiriath Yearim, and at some point during Samuel's tenure as judge, the reestablishment of the tabernacle at Gibeon, not very far from Kiriath Yearim. So we have about 20 years of Samuel leading the Israelis in peace. The Philistines are leaving them alone. The Amorites are leaving them alone. Samuel is spending this time going around to different key cities in the heart of Israel territory, which we're talking about the hill country of Benjamin and the hill country of Ephraim, right there at the center of Israeli territory. He spends a little time each year, apparently, at his own hometown of Ramathaim, Zophim, which appears to be in extreme southern Ephraim. Well, he builds an altar there, and apparently he has a custom when he goes to his certain key cities of his judgeship. He invites the leadership of the city to come, and maybe a few honorary guests to come. And when he offers the sacrifice, he gives gifts of food to these people and eats with them, puts the blessing of God upon them. Those are going to be components in this next story. So some time passes, which I already told you is about 20 years, which I believe is going to make Samuel about 60 years old, maybe 61, maybe 62, just depends on when he was born. Chapter 8 says, when Samuel became old. Now, I personally don't consider 60 all that old, being 65 myself, but it is definitely getting up there as far as the Israelis are concerned. And they start thinking about what's going to happen when Samuel can't lead us anymore, because they know the history. When the judge leads, a strong judge leads, everything is peaceful and fine. But when that judge becomes older, less capable, less attentive, and then eventually dies, things just fall apart. And so you need to bring up a new leader, a new judge who is strong. And so the Israelis are thinking about that as they watch Samuel gray and get old. And also, the scripture says, he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second, Abiyah. And they were judges in Beersheba. Actually, one of them was at Beersheba, and I was trying to remember. I'll have to chase it down. It's in one of the Chronicles, I think. He was at another town. These guys, based on Samuel's age, are probably in their 20s and 30s, probably more likely in their 30s, maybe into their 40s. And so they are now the up-and-coming leaders for Israel. And they got a problem. Verse 3, yet his sons did not walk in his ways, but turned aside after gain. They took bribes and perverted justice. Now, they're not as bad as Eli's boys. Remember, Eli's boys were horrendous. They were extorting sex out of the women coming to the tabernacle. And they were threatening violence through their workers against anybody that didn't give them the cuts of meat that they wanted in the way they wanted them. These guys are simply accepting bribes to give judgment calls in the favor of the one that gives the better bribe. That's not good, but in the period of the judges, it's not as bad as it's been before. So this is understood. This is known amongst the Israelis, and they're worried. So verse number 4, all the elders of Israel gathered together. They came to Samuel at Ramah. They come to him at his hometown for a special meeting. One little other item I should mention here, because it'll come up later. You remember how they've been at peace with the Philistines and with the Amorites. Well, the Philistines are starting to jack up the price for blacksmithing services that they have control of, and they're also moving in groups of armed men into their little trade compounds inside Israel. And so that's a little nerve-wracking that that's happening. But they've also got a new king of the Ammonites that has popped up on their east side, a guy by the name of Nahash, and he's kind of saber-rattling. So the leadership of Israel are worried that they've got problems starting to press in on them from the outside, and on the inside, their good judge is getting old, coming closer to death, while his sons are not as righteous as he is. And so they got a solution in mind when they walk in to this meeting with Samuel. They said to him, behold, you are old. Now, it's never good when people come into your presence and that's how they start their conversation. And then they said, and your sons don't walk in your ways. So they're not like you. And that's always disappointing as well, isn't it? I'm sure that it hurt Samuel's heart to find out that his boys were taking bribes. But now comes their recommendation. Now, appoint for us a king to judge us like all the nations. Now, the nations around them all have kings, autocratic leaders that pass their authority to the next member in their family. And no doubt, these guys are thinking this will fix the problem. If we have a good, strong king, and then he trains up his son to be a good, strong king, and passes on the throne to him upon his death, and it just keeps repeating over and over, that'll be good. That'll keep things under control. Well, it don't quite work that way. And we understand that. We actually have a phrase, a saying that gets repeated all the time. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That is why here in America, here in the United States, we changed to a representative government, a constitutional republic, once we ran into problems with bad King George. Well, these guys, they don't personally understand the dangers of kingship, autocratic rule. This thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. Remember, he's the current judge. He's the current leader. And he's doing it by the direction of God. And so he takes personal affront at this. He feels that they are rejecting his leadership. And that hurts. So Samuel prayed to He Who Is, talks to God, and I have no doubt he griped to God about it. Been there, done that. When people don't like the way you're doing things, you talk to God about it. Verse 7. He Who Is said to Samuel, obey the voice of the people in all that they say, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. So God, first of all, straightens things out with Samuel. Samuel, you need to suck it up. This is not about you. This is about me. They're not rejecting your leadership. They're rejecting my leadership, which Samuel, when he would think about it, I am sure understood what God meant. Because Samuel didn't just make up rules. He got his direction straight from God. Remember, he's a prophet, not just simply a judge. And so everything that Samuel said was God saying it. So yes, the problem that the people are having is with God. They don't want God to be their king. They want a physical human king. So God continues, verse 8, according to all the deeds that they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are also doing to you. So it's the same old thing. New day, same garbage. They do whatever they feel like, not what I tell them to do. So he says, obey their voice, only you shall solemnly warn them and show them the ways of the king who shall reign over them. So God says, all right, Samuel, you give them exactly what they're asking for. They want a strong ruler. They want a strong guy, somebody that looks good, handsome perhaps, muscular. Looks good in a uniform, will fight for them, will win for them, get goodies for them. You give them what they're actually looking for. They're looking for a king like all the nations around them have, a power player. Go ahead and give them that sort of autocrat. But at the same time, you tell them what it's going to cost them. And so I really think it's important for us as Christians, who are interested in government, by the way, to pay attention to these warnings, because autocracy is never a good thing unless the autocrat is God himself. The solo ruler is God himself, because he is always going to do the right thing. Not so much when we talk about humans. They're always prone to do what they feel like for their own benefit. So let's see what the warnings are about autocracy here. Verse 10. So Samuel told all the words of he who is to the people who are asking for a king from him. So these are not Samuel's warnings. These are God's warnings. These are prophecies. These will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots and to be his horsemen and to run before his chariots. So he will basically, begin a draft. He will initiate a draft into his military. Now, up to this point, the Israelis have not had a standing army. They have had a militia system, which is every able-bodied adult man has to be ready to show up when the trumpet is sounded to be organized into a fighting unit to deal with it, whatever the problem is. And then once the problem has been resolved, everybody goes back to their jobs. But the king is going to establish a standing military, and he's going to draft young men into this standing military. Verse 12, he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties. So standing military again. And then he is going to have the structure that's needed in society to support such a standing military. So he's going to need to draft people into the military-industrial complex, shall we say. Some to plow his ground, to reap his harvest, to make his implements of war, and the equipment of his chariots. Now, the mention of chariots here, very important that we bring up something from the past. God told Moses to tell the people that whenever they did get around to having a king, the king should not multiply to himself horses and chariots. He was supposed to depend on militia members, men, the base unit of a militia. God is warning the Israelis, your king is going to break that. And then he's going to need support to feed his armies and to equip his armies and to make all that equipment. So you're going to have to be paying an awful lot of sweat equity into his military. Verse 13. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. So remember, he is also going to have his royalty to uphold. Yeah, he's going to have a military that needs to be taken care of, but he's also going to have his own court system, meaning all of that pomp and circumstance. He's going to have to entertain people coming in all the time. And so he's going to draft some of your non-combatant ladies to make scented perfume and olive oil, to make things very impressive when you get together with other people. He's going to need cooks and bakers to feed people when they come together for these treaty sessions, these plotting sessions, these organizing sessions. So men and women are going to be put into government service, and not just any old government, the government of monarchy, the king's government. Verse 14 continues. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his servants. So he is going to insist that his people working for him need to be properly remunerated to do that work. You know, you can't attract good people unless you give them good salaries. And in this case, the salary is going to be stuff, places. So he's going to confiscate people's private property and repurpose it to his supporters so that they will get his stuff done. Verse 15, he will take the tenth of your grain and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and to his servants. Now, the Israelis are already paying a tithe to God, which goes to the Levites and the priests to do God's work. What's God's work? The worship that's supposed to be going on for the public, also the judicial things that are supposed to be happening in accordance with God's justice, God's word. So the Israelis already have one-tenth of their income going to God's work. Well, God warns them, well, he's going to take at least a tenth to do his work. So he's going to take just as much as God takes to get his stuff done. Verse 16, he will take your male servants and your female servants, the best of your young men and your donkeys, and put them to his work. He will take the tenth of your flock, and you shall be his slaves. So he's going to put taxes on you across the board because you have to have all of that to support this government, to support his desires, to get his will done. And when it's all said and done, and this is the important phrase in this whole thing, you shall be his slaves. You will be working for him, not yourself. That's the problem with autocracy. That's the problem with bloated government and a government that is run by one person in particular. And so the Israelis were warned, that is what you're trying to sign on to. That's what you're insisting of. And so God gives one last warning to them to wave them off from this bad decision. Verse 18, in that day you will cry out because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves. So at some point, you are going to be sorry you did this. And you're going to come crying to God to relieve you of all of this tax burden, all of this monarchical pressure that's on you, all of this autocratic angst. But he who is will not answer you in that day. Basically, God says, when all of this happens, don't come crying to me. You made your own bed, sleep in it. Now, that may sound cold-hearted, but God is trying to wave these guys off from making this choice. But they won't be dissuaded. Verse 19. But the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. And they said, no, there shall be a king over us, that we may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. No, we need this type of guy. He'll be on our side. He'll be for us. Give him to us. That's what they insist. And so when Samuel had heard all the words of the people, he repeated them into the ears of he who is. Because remember, Samuel is acting as the prophet, the judge. In some fashion, he's acting as the high priest of the nation, so he is the intercessor between God and mankind. So he tells God all about it. And he who has said to Samuel, obey their voice, make him a king. And so Samuel said to the men of Israel, go every man to his city. And so God directs Samuel next to the type of guy they're looking for. He doesn't give them the type of guy that they really should have. He holds back on that until the second guy. God lets them learn a hard lesson by letting them have their way. Now, I'm going to emphasize that repeatedly through this story about the first king of Israel. That this king, while he starts well in the first few months, is actually the type of guy the Israelis wanted and deserved. The self-centered egoist who thinks it's all about him and who is constantly trying to bring to himself more and more power. And so this is one of those places where God lets them learn the hard lesson by letting them have their way. In the last few seconds, I will remind you that the first king does not come from the tribe that God has already designated as the royal tribe, which is the tribe of Judah, the tribe of the blessing and the promise. The first king will come from the tribe that was almost wiped out, the tribe of Benjamin. Mark your place. We'll get back here next time we're into the Word.